When Pat Kinnean was a kid growing up in Butte, Montana, he and his buddies used to take a shortcut home after baseball games. Instead of a bridge, they'd hop on a pipeline crossing over Silver Bow Creek.
And when your buddy would get out there on the pipe, you'd start throwing rocks at him, trying to knock him off. So eventually, you know, we all got knocked off the pipe, and you'd end up in the creek, and about 2 days later, your shoelaces are gone, and about a week later, your shoes are gone because you fell in the creek, and it was full of acidic mine water.
He's a fourth-generation Butte miner, and that was in the 70s, when Silver Bow Creek carved past where the Civic Center and the Chamber of Commerce are now. But Kinnean says back then, it was better known by a rather unfortunate nickname.
You're going to make me say it, aren't you, Nora? Well, yeah, I mean, we called it Shit Creek.
That's because up until the 1960s, the creek was also flowing with raw municipal sewage. Nothing grew on its banks, and no fish swam.
So there was absolutely, I mean, there was no life in that stream.
It's still dead. It's just that nowadays, instead of kids being warned to stay away from the stream or dared to go near it, most people don't even know it's there. For the last 30-some years, this first mile of historic Silver Bow Creek has been left an overgrown drainage ditch that is still haunted by toxic mine waste. And that is a big problem for a growing number of people in Butte.
We're here tonight to tell them no. Say it with me. No. Leaving the waste in the ground, the contamination in our water, and a sacrifice zone in the middle of our town is not good enough for Butte.
That's David McCumber, editor of the Montana Standard, speaking to a packed house at a rally in November. Like the Berkeley Pit, that mile-wide former open-pit copper mine on the east edge of town, this creek is a trauma from Butte's mining past. But in the last few years, this unassuming, used-to-be creek, not the pit, has become the major combat zone in the battle for a cleaner, healthier future for Butte. An activist group called the Restore Creek Coalition is on the front line of that fight. At the rally they organized, in addition to the newspaper editor, there was 76-year-old Sister Mary Jo McDonald, who led us in a prayer to Our Lady of the Rockies.
And so, Our Lady, we ask that you bless us. We ask that your son blesses us and continues to call each of us to the ministry of the cleanup that needs to happen in this, our community.
MC Ron Davis, the owner of Butte Broadcasting, Inc., had a different flavor of message.
We were called a vocal minority by our own leadership in this town. To hell with that, we're the people of Butte. We're here to fight, we're gonna fight, and it's an old-fashioned street fight, and Butte loves that.
Against the odds, this cadre of local activists, and trust me, there are more, are gaining real traction with federal officials who are making permanent decisions about Butte's Superfund cleanup, one of the biggest and most intractable in the entire country. And they all share a singular goal.
It's time to get it done.
Get it done.
Get it done.
Get her done.
Time to remove the tailings, restore the creek, and get it done.
I'm Nora Sachs, and this is The Last First Mile, a documentary about why the first mile of Silver Bow Creek was left last to be cleaned up, and what a crew of feisty locals in Butte are doing about it. To the Restorer Creekers, this industrial sewer ditch is much more than just an eyesore in the center of their town.
Silver Bow Creek is the actual headwaters of the Columbia River and Clark Fork River.
That's 72-year-old Superfund watchdog and former state lawmaker Fritz Daly. Unlike the rest of Silver Bow Creek that flows west of Butte and the Clark Fork River beyond that, there's still literally tons of 100-year-old toxic mine waste buried along this first mile of the creek corridor.
Who would ever do a cleanup and start the cleanup in the middle or at the end instead of at the beginning? I mean, it makes no sense.
As long as that pollution sits there, it's an ecological threat to the restored watershed downstream, which is finally starting to see some native trout return. But there's more going on just under the surface. Daly has deep and strong Butte roots.
I want to live here. I want my grandkids and kids to live here. I want other people's grandkids and kids to live here. That's what I want.
So for him and a lot of the other activists, cleaning up this creek is not just about righting the ecological wrongs of the past. It's about a better quality of life.
The reason that's so important is because the entire environmental, mostly importantly, economic and social future of our community depends on that. Because we're going to be seen as a second-class contaminated city if we don't do something about this.
And he's hit a nerve. Butte is poor. Poorer on average than the rest of the state. First, the underground mining industry went bust. And then in 1982, the Berkeley Pit shut down. Jobs dried up and people left town. In a lot of ways, the once flourishing mining city became a husk of its former self. Then in the late 80s, because of all that leftover mine pollution, Silverbow Creek and the entire Butte area were classified as Superfund sites. Superfund is the federal program in charge of cleaning up the nation's most toxic and contaminated land and water. Butte has been struggling to regain its economic footing and its reputation ever since. And that worries Sister Mary Jo McDonald.
Yes, because I have gray hair, and by the time this is done, I'm not going to be here.
As a Sister of Charity of Leavenworth who follows the teachings of St. Vincent de Paul, she's been active on social justice issues for decades. Now that she's retired from her role as pastoral minister of St. Anne's Parish, the cleanup here is her chief concern.
And if our community is to grow, we have got to get the Superfund site label off of Butte so that we know it's been corrected and been corrected properly and right.
Not everyone thinks Butte has been held hostage by Superfund. Some see the program as the trigger for a lot of cleanup that's happened, especially on the Butte Hill. And some, like Tom Malloy, who's the reclamation specialist for Butte Silverbow County, think the lack of economic development and stigma are not all Superfund's fault. He says when local businesses try to recruit new employees,
the first thing they do is they get off the plane, they look at the Berkeley Pit, they say, forget it, and they're out. They don't like the looking at a big open pit mine dump.
Malloy is from Brooklyn originally, but came to Butte early on to play football for Montana Tech. He's worked in the mining and reclamation industry for the last 40 years. And he stresses that Butte is not just a historic mining town, it's an active one. Right next door to the Berkeley, Montana Resources is digging another open pit copper mine, which might end up being an even bigger hole in the ground, which can also be a turnoff to would-be Butteans.
You know, when they get back on the plane and they leave, well, that's great by me because they go to Kalispell and Billings and Helena and Bozeman. Yeah, Bozeman's great. You ought to go check that place out.
Sister Mary Jo doesn't want to see Butte turn into Bozeman or Missoula. But when she looks east or west, she sees cities with thriving economies, safe, healthy environments, and living bodies of water. And she wants that for Butte.
Missoula had the loudest voices. They had the biggest contingencies. They played all the political games necessary, and they got the cleanup for Milltown Dam. But if something happens up here, it's done. It's 1 mile, 1 mile that we're asking for. That's not a lot. And so, yes, we are going to continue to battle for it.
That's why, after decades of living in the shadow of Superfund, people who still have energy to mobilize for a better environmental and economic future for Butte are dead set on bringing this 1 mile stretch of dead creek back to life. Listen, the Restore a Creek Coalition's Lush promo video says it better than I can.
Imagine what a restored Silverbow Creek in the heart of Butte could do for all of us. The possibilities are endless, and the choice is ours. This matter affects all of Butte, its residents, its public institutions, its businesses, and all of us need to step up and join our voices. Remove the paratailings and their downstream residue. Restore our creek. Give us back the waters that once shone like silver in the sun, winding through this beautiful valley.
And since the final cleanup deal is still looming for the Butte Hill and the section of creek, Daly says this is their shot at making that dream come true.
The decisions that we make in Butte today, they're forever decisions. They have forever consequences. And so it's so important that we make them right.
To better understand how the creek got to be the way it is and why it might be hard to revive it, I went on a walkabout with Joe Griffin.
We're at the top of what was referred to as the Metro Storm Drain. It's now referred to as Upper Silverbow Creek.
Griffin is a retired hydrogeologist and former project manager for the State Department of Environmental Quality. We're standing near the intersection of Texas Avenue and Civic Center Road, staring at a channel about the width of a double-wide trailer.
They planted grasses and stuff to try and make it look somewhat natural, but what do you think? Nora, doesn't it kind of look engineered? Does this look like
natural,
any natural stream?
Not at all. I mean, partially because it's missing water, but even if it was seasonal, it's so straight. It's so carved looking.
Yes. Well, it is. It's an engineered channel.
That's because for over a century, this stretch of Upper Silverbow Creek was treated as Butte's industrial colon. By the late 1800s, smelters lined the stream, crushing and grinding down ore bodies to get the desired metals out of them, and slurrying mine waste, called tailings, right into the creek or onto the floodplain. It was a hot mess, until the 1920s and 30s, that is, when this channel was constructed to tame the unruly creek.
The reason they built this channel was just to keep tailings, sediment, and water moving down through all of the mining operations. It also delivered a lot of tailings downstream all the way to Missoula and the Milltown Dam.
Groundwater that was being pumped up and out of Butte's labyrinthian underground mining complex was also dumped directly into it.
So you had highly contaminated and very acidic mine water flowing down this channel.
But in 1955, the Berkeley Pit came on the scene and changed Silverbow Creek's fate forever. First, the open pit mine severed the creek off from its feeder streams high up in the mountains of the Continental Divide. And then in 1982, Atlantic Richfield, which bought out the Anaconda Mining Company, shut off the water pumps in the underground mines. The Berkeley Pit started to fill with poison water, and Upper Silverbow Creek effectively vanished, for good. That's why it's dry now, except for occasional stormwater runoff. But all that waste rock being dug out of the pit had to go somewhere. A lot of it got stashed right here, on top of a huge pile of old mine tailings from the Parrott Smelter, which stood near where the Civic Center is now. The Parrott tailings are still there, they're just buried under about 15 feet of pit overburden and iced over with county infrastructure, creating a toxic underground layer cake, which is causing some heinous groundwater contamination issues. Griffin takes me over to a pipe sticking out of the snow. It's actually a groundwater well reaching deep into the aquifer. Among scientists in the know, it's infamous. Well GS41.
Where they pump water out of the ground and it looks like blue Gatorade. It's pretty interesting. And blue is the color of copper, so.
I would hazard a guess that most people around here think that the Berkeley Pit contains the most toxic water in the world, or at least in Montana. Not so, Griffin says.
This is the worst contaminated groundwater in Butte, for sure. It's worse than the Berkeley Pit.
Let's unpack that. Most trout species can't tolerate more than 10 to 15 parts per billion copper. The so-called water in the Berkeley Pit has around 70,000 parts per billion. Well, GS41 punches in at 1 million parts per billion copper. And this groundwater under our feet is also loaded with zinc, cadmium, arsenic, lead, and mercury. Pat Kinnean says those levels of copper
can contaminate groundwater for eons.
Remember that kid whose shoes were eaten by the creek when he fell off a pipeline? Same guy. He knows a lot about this because he's an environmental scientist with Montana's Natural Resource Damage Program. And he's been helping the state and citizens make decisions on how best to repair Silverbow Creek for the last decade. When he first saw the blue groundwater coming out of GS41, he thought his colleague was pranking him.
And I just thought, no way, you know, this is not real. I said, give me your shovel, Nick. And I took the shovel off his truck and I put it in this bucket of blue water. This was a summer day. So I left the shovel in the bucket and we went down to town pump and got a pop and came back. So 5, maybe 10 minutes, and I pulled the shovel out of the bucket and it's plated with copper.
Kanin has lived most of his life in Butte and
had no idea that this problem existed right in the middle of town.
How fast these massive plumes of contaminated groundwater are moving toward the creek, what to do about it, who's going to pay to fix it, out of what pot of money, has been at the center of an epic fight between the agencies and parties responsible for cleaning up the creek under Superfund. There was clashing science, and it's super technical. But in a nutshell, in 2006, the Environmental Protection Agency decided that the system that Atlantic Richfield put in place to capture and treat the dirty groundwater was good enough. Here's Joe Griffin again.
They said, even if you removed everything, we don't think we could stop capturing and treating groundwater for a very long time. So we're just writing off that aquifer. We're writing off that aquifer. We will make sure that people aren't drinking that water. And then they said, if groundwater is affecting Silverbow or Blacktail Creeks, then we will look at additional remedy measures.
The state, however, was not on board with that waste-in-place solution. Kenin has been at that negotiating table since 2009, and he put the state's position this way.
And the angle that Montana took is that as long as these wastes are left in the floodplain, they'll always contaminate groundwater, and the groundwater can always get to surface water and contaminate surface water. And the state of Montana spent $150 million cleaning up Silver Bow Creek from the west end of Butte to Warm Springs Ponds. So wouldn't you want to protect that investment with a good cleanup right here in town? Absolutely.
So there's the rub. For the last 12 years, the EPA, Atlantic Richfield, and the state of Montana have locked horns over whether or not the pollution along the creek corridor can stay where it is or needs to come out. And crucially, who's going to pick up the tab? Because of this battle, they've been unable or unwilling to reach a final financial agreement, or consent decree in Superfund lingo, and move ahead with the cleanup. Twice, the state even walked away.
You know, it's a tough process. And I'll tell you, it's not fun to go to those meetings. I mean, you know, it's pretty tense. But you know, Butte's worth it. So you go.
But not everyone gets to go. These negotiations are confidential. Secret, because they're under a gag order issued by a federal court in 2003, which means for years the public has been left to wonder what is or isn't going on behind closed doors, while big decisions for their town are being ironed out. Sister Mary Jo McDonald says being left out has gotten really old.
You know, we were a company town for a long time, and we acted like we were a company town, and we let them dictate what would happen here in Butte, but we're not a company town anymore. And they cannot dictate to us anymore what should be or what is okay.
So a few years ago, she and other concerned locals decided to get better organized. In 2015, citizen-led groups, businesses, and leaders from across town united under the banner of the Restore Creek Coalition. They've hosted rallies, as you heard. They canvassed hundreds of community members to dream up what the Silver Bow Creek Corridor could be one day, and came up with their vision of a free-flowing stream in a park celebrating the headwaters of the Columbia River. Sister Mary Jo says they're not married to that exact version.
But we put that forth because nobody had any vision.
And some have taken their activism to the courts. In 2015, she and the Silver Bow Creek Headwaters Coalition won a four-year-long battle with the state to have the channel's name legally changed.
So it is no longer Metro Storm Drain. And as such, because it has become Silver Bow Creek, they have to clean it to the standards of the state waterways. They have got to do that. They have no choice now.
Then in 2016, the Headwaters Coalition and the Montana Standard tried to get the gag order on the cleanup negotiations lifted to let some sunshine in. They lost their case, but editor David McCumber says he's made no bones about supporting the public's campaign for a better cleanup and will continue to do so.
The whole thing to me is applying direct energy to this project seemed like a really important thing to do for Butte.
That's a surprising position for a journalist. But McCumber has covered lots of environmental issues across the West, including the Libby asbestos tragedy. He helped uncover the scandal of W.R. Grace & Company and its vermiculite mine that was slowly poisoning hundreds of people in Libby. A week after the first story ran in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer back in 1999.
There was a community meeting in the little gym, high school gym. 600 people in there. It was just like packed. And everybody with their oxygen bottles and getting up, talking about losing family members and tears streaming down their faces. And the EPA came in there and they did the right thing. And that's a big deal.
Their investigation helped lead to a $600 million Superfund cleanup in Libby. But he says that's not what he found when he came to Butte in 2015.
It seemed a lot more hands-off here. It seemed a lot more sort of casual, and partly is because it had been going on for 30 years at the time. And so that's why I thought, you know, this needs to change. Something has to change.
It's not just the public that's been frustrated with the pace of the cleanup decisions. I caught up with Butte Silver Bow's Superfund coordinator, John Sesso, at the courthouse in March. He's a Democratic state senator, former Senate majority leader, and was the county planning director for 25 years. Since the county is one of the named responsible parties, he's been in the fray for quite a while. And he says Superfund negotiations are by nature really complicated and time-consuming. But in the last 4 years...
Really, unbeknownst to the public,
very little negotiating was being done. We would go to these meetings and say, okay, well, we got to come to terms with this. But man, people just got expert at kicking the can down the road, and it was just no progress.
Since the negotiations have been stuck in neutral, Sesso says that increasing public pressure to get things moving again has been a critical force and helped tip the scales.
It was really a coalition of the community saying, hey, we're tired of it too. And even though we had to take some shrapnel and some collateral hits because we were in the room and nothing was happening.
He's thankful they're speaking out and setting a high bar for what they want. Around this point, we got interrupted by a pipe and drum band marching through the courthouse.
We're going to have to take a little break.
Can we go see that for a sec?
It was the day before St. Patrick's Day, and this is Butte, so go figure. When the bagpipes died down, Sesso said there's something that's harder to explain to those on the outside. It's that while local government is there to represent the public's interests, at the end of the day, Superfund decisions are based on science and what you can compel polluters to do under the law, not emotions.
What we deserve is not in the law. There doesn't say that in the law that Butte deserves anything. What we are going to get is a protective remedy that protects human health and the environment. And because of the cooperation that we've been able to engender now, we're going to get at some of those things we want.
Chad Okrish is a professor at Montana Tech and a member of the Butte Natural Resources Council, which is closely involved in Superfund. And his take is that law is always about righting the scales of justice.
Right now, the scales are so far tilted, and the people here have contributed so much and suffered so much and will continue to suffer into the future unless we restore the basic integrity of the environment that we inhabit.
For the Restorer Creekers, that means the waste buried along the creek corridor has got to go. That first step now has widespread support. The state is forging ahead with removing the Parrot tailings, a project estimated to cost around $30 million in total. The head of the snake will soon be cut off. It's the lofty ideal of turning the old industrial sewer ditch back into a stream again that strikes some as chasing rainbows, even those who want the mine waste gone. Tom Malloy, the county reclamation specialist, pretty much summed up the point of view I heard from a lot of informed skeptics.
I would love to see a meandering, flowing creek through the middle of Butte. I will be amazed when it happens, if it happens.
The most obvious reason for that is the Upper Silverbow Creek channel is dry. That means in order to get it flowing again, water will need to come from somewhere else. That seemed like it was going to be a major stumbling block until February of this year, when Montana Resources announced they were going to start pumping and treating Berkeley pit water 5 years early. One day, it's possible that the very beast that cut Silverbow Creek off from its source in the mountains could become its fountainhead. However, even if that does come to fruition, it doesn't solve the hydrologic third rail. Pat Kinneen reminds me that
the one thing we haven't talked about yet is stormwater.
Stormwater runoff is widely considered to be the worst problem for Silverbow Creek. Malloy says the city of Butte is perched not just on a very rich, but a very steep hill.
We've seen whitewater coming off of the Butte Hill during a big July thunder bumper when the water flowing everywhere. And during those events is when Silverbow Creek takes a hit.
That's because mine dumps on the hill have been cleaned up to protect humans from lead and arsenic. But there's still loads of copper and zinc left there, which can wipe out aquatic life. Kinneen says when you look at Butte,
our system is built to collect stormwater and put it in a pipe and shoot it to the creek so it doesn't soak in, so it's getting to surface water, and that's a big issue.
It would be a smaller issue if Upper Silverbow Creek itself was bigger. Then dilution might be a solution.
Bozeman, Missoula, Helena, and Great Falls, they all have contaminants going in the creek, but they also have the Madison River or the Gallatin River or the Clark Fork River or the Missouri River to dump into, and that is a huge amount of dilution that they have available. And here in Butte, not only are we the source of the contamination at very high levels of contamination, but our receiving stream is just a trickle.
These are just a couple of the practical challenges that Silverbow Creek faces, but there are also knotty questions of priorities. Matt Vinson is the former chief executive of Butte Silver Bow County and worked on Superfund for many years on the inside. He takes me to check out another creek right in town, which converges with Silver Bow a little ways down. Vincent grew up fishing on Blacktail Creek. We're there maybe 30 seconds before his son Rye has a brook trout wriggling on the end of his line.
Oh my God, that's a nice one. That's a big one.
The creek that we're spitting distance from here, that's the northeastern headwaters of the Columbia River, not some stream that used to flow clean through the upper valley 100 years ago.
Since there are limited cleanup and restoration dollars to go around, Vincent thinks cleaning up Blacktail Creek, which is alive but stressed, would be a lot more ecological bang per buck. We are, in fact, standing right on the Blacktail Berm, another tailings pile that threatens the headwaters. But this one never even got buried.
Is there any cover on
This is, I mean, you're standing on raw mine waste.
Really?
So, yeah.
Even so, there are fish in Blacktail. Rye just caught another.
That's a pretty nice one.
But Vincent says there'd be lots more healthier ones, and maybe even some native trout here if it weren't so contaminated. And as for the restorer creekers,
they really don't understand how complex the issues are, which, you know, maybe I'm all wrong. Maybe we shouldn't be making it that complex. It's dirty versus clean. I wish it were that easy, because really in this day and age, what's clean?
Those are big, thirsty dilemmas. But members of the Restore a Creek Coalition don't claim to have or need the answers to all of these questions. Right now, they're just trying to make sure their vision gets seen and heard before it's too late.
A hand delivery, go to the Council of Commissioners.
I caught up with them in January in a back room of the Chamber of Commerce, where they were counting the fruits of their biggest on-the-ground effort yet, a petition drive. Northy Trethaway, the coalition spokesperson, says,
"We are telling them what the heck we want to see in the center of this town, and the people that sign these petitions are demanding that this gets done."
In 3 weeks, at just three events and online, they collected almost 3,500 signatures supporting their cause. That's 10% of Butte's population. To the Restorer Creekers, those numbers are hard proof they're not just the vocal minority anymore. Butte has awakened from its sleep about Superfund. Their timing is critical, because after years of stalling, the EPA is tightening the screws on the cleanup. Late last year, Butte made it onto EPA Chief Scott Pruitt's new Superfund emphasis list. It's one of about 20 handpicked sites targeted to receive special attention.
So we sat down, we put pen to paper, and we said, okay, where are these sites where they have been languishing, but we can, with some additional work, get them moving?
That's Doug Benevento, the newly appointed EPA Administrator for Region 8, who oversees Montana. He's the new sheriff in town, tasked with getting Butte's cleanup back on track. And he is making haste. At the end of January, he announced that he had done in 2 months what no one else had been able to do in 12 years, get the responsible parties to reach a conceptual agreement for the consent decree covering the cleanup of the Butte Hill and Upper Silver Bow Creek. At that public meeting, he held up Restorer Creek's elaborate spiral-bound plan.
You know, we can't do it all. As I said, I'm not going to tell you that we can make that document come to life. What we can do is create a condition where that vision in that document can come to life.
Benevento's gesture stirred up some cautious optimism among the Restorer Creekers. Many of them are veteran Superfund agitators, and while they respect Benevento, they don't want to get their hopes up too high. David McCumber, though, was less restrained.
I think that it's very clear that they took the people of Butte and their sort of new activism around this very seriously.
And that's something that Administrator Benevento affirmed when I spoke with him at KBMF, Butte's community radio station, in April. He said he couldn't overstate the importance of the Restorer Creek Coalition, because their vision is bigger than EPA and bigger than Superfund. But there was something else Benevento said.
Each and every one of them have something better that they could be doing, okay? And they're not doing that because they're doing this. And think about that in today's society, in today's world, that you have people who care that much about their community. That means something.
Just how much of Restorer Creek's holistic agenda wedged its way into the coming cleanup agreement is still a mystery because the gag order has not yet been lifted. But even if the coalition gets everything they want on paper, nothing in Butte is ever really a done deal because environmental messes here play out on a different scale. Even after the tailings are long gone from the creek's floodplain, that aquifer will take decades, maybe even a century, to heal. Which means the Restorer Creek Coalition and the generations after them will need to settle in. Sister Mary Jo McDonald.
my hope is when this consent decree comes out, we'll find that there's some good things there, but there might be some things we'll still challenge. And I think we need to be ready to do that because our job is not done.